Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome, and thank you for checking out today's podcast. This is Tony Gill, podcast producer for NBC Sports Chicago. And to celebrate Black History Month, we are premiering an exclusive episode every Friday of this month across all of our NBC Sports Chicago podcasts to have interesting and important discussions about the contributions made by Black athletes in Chicago. For today's episode, we have former Cub, now baseball analyst, Doug Glanville. He joins Lawrence Holmes to discuss the effect Black athletes have had on baseball and his experiences playing the sport he loves. We hope you enjoy.
Obviously, it being Black History Month and it being a big deal to a lot of us, when you think about sports and Black History Month, what comes to mind?
Yeah, well, I think of legacy. That's one of the first words that comes to mind, because when you think about Black history and a lot of the progress that's made over time, so much has been this connecting point between activism, civil rights, and athletes, you know, even entertainers in a larger scale. So, you know, obviously in baseball, I'm connected more through Jackie Robinson in 1947 and his pioneering efforts. But I also think about so much work he did with Martin Luther King, inspiring him and many others before and after him. And his career didn't stop there. He did so many other pioneering things, from banks to being a columnist after his career. So, you know, sports, especially in the Black community, has a different connotation because progress, activism, so much has been measured through what some of these athletes in sports have done on the platforms that they've been afforded.
When it comes to your own sport, baseball, there sometimes I feel as if things kind of start and stop with Jackie Robinson, and we don't do enough with talking more about the Negro Leagues and talking about, you know, even if we start talking about Curt Flood and what he was able to do for not just Black players, but players overall. Why does some of this get distilled down? Is it just that as people, we don't have enough bandwidth to talk about all of these things?
Well, there's no question. I mean, Curt Flood is a great example. And, you know, there is something to be said when, you know, Robinson or Curt Flood spoke on a plane that was not just for, you know, people of color, for Black people directly. There was a larger goal that was going to be for a better society, to benefit all, living to the tenets of our Constitution, the tenets of our country. And that benefit is for everyone. You know, Robinson talked about, you know, basically desegregation or integration, and effectively Major League Baseball was the first major U.S. institution to desegregate. It preceded military and many others. And, you know, so Curt Flood, for example, who had his own experiences, did not want to leave St. Louis as he was traded to Philadelphia, in part because of the way Philadelphia and the Phillies treated Jackie Robinson. He wanted to stay where he was playing before. He had built a, you know, he had an art gallery, he had a long all-star career, and, you know, he took the stand. But that freedom that ultimately led to free agency, that position, was something that became beneficial to everyone. So you can get, to some degree, lost, or sort of the movement for what was related or sparked through Black consciousness can get lost sometimes because it was universally beneficial, or the goals were larger than just sort of, I'm just trying to help Black folks, for example. So, but there's so many stories to tell, as you mentioned, before Jackie Robinson, after Jackie Robinson, that can get swept up. But there's no question that it was not Jackie Robinson alone when you talk about baseball and how change came about.
What was your experience like? Did you ever feel like you were not just representing your family, but also representing a culture when you were playing?
Well, without a doubt. And not just baseball, throughout many stops in my life. And I'm sure everybody to a certain degree who is a person of color in particular could relate to this, this feeling. If, you know, if you're by yourself, if you're alone, you are the integration. I've been in many scenarios like that, or you're a pioneer, you became the first, or whatever the situation, there's always a feeling of representing something larger than self. And that could be something that's a wonderfully noble responsibility, that you feel connected to a larger group. But there's also a through line that's not just about your race, but you the struggle connects to just being an American and trying to hold America to a standard by which it's outlined constitutionally and to the tenets of what has built this country. So that sort of connection, or sometimes that tension, often presents itself where you do feel responsible for something larger than self. So that selflessness can be an asset, but it's also can be a burden. The feeling of carrying the weight of not just being able to say, hey, I'm just a ball player, I'm trying to go do my job, but you have other consequential elements to your presence in the game. So there's no doubt it cuts both ways, but that feeling is always there.
You spoke about being the integration, and I know that this wasn't the case for every clubhouse that you were in, but when it came to talking about issues like this, do ball players talk about bigger societal issues in the middle of trying to win a pennant?
It depends on the team. You think about, for example, the Philadelphia Eagles. I mean, when they won, they talked openly about social justice issues and reform. It depends on the personnel. I've definitely been on teams that spoke more and some spoke less or didn't speak at all. And there's different levels of comfort. Depends on your administration, the front office, the ownership group. All these things kind of play a role. But you are conscious of it because, especially today with social media and the explosiveness, the cancel culture, all these different elements make it a fraught decision to speak on certain issues. And you have to be mindful of the consequences at times, sometimes certainly unfair, but also just being informed. And with the speed of information we have, although there's more information out there, we're also less informed in certain regards because the sources are coming from everywhere and you have to be able to distill fact from fiction and truth, you know, from falsehood. So it's complicated, and in some degrees it makes it harder, but that responsibility, that feeling does not go away, and it really never has.
What about the interpersonal stuff with the teammates? Are these conversations that can be had inside of a clubhouse?
Once again, it depends on the clubhouse, but generally it's a hot button issue. It's very difficult to talk about sports and its intersection with society, especially when it comes to social justice. I mean, I teach a class at University of Connecticut called Sport and Society, and we get into these issues all the time. And a lot of the students talk about how difficult it is to figure out exactly what's effective, because you know, sometimes the backlash is so powerful, which may or may not be based on any facts, that alone makes people hesitate. You're concerned for a lot of levels, whether it's your future, it could be something selfish, it could be endorsements, it could be money, it could be all these things that concern you about the risk of speaking out. And that is a difficult decision, and how to do it matters. But often either way, there's going to be some fallout, just your willingness to take that step.
Who were some of your heroes in this regard coming up and growing up?
Well, I have to start with my parents. I was very fortunate. My father came from Trinidad and Tobago in 1956 and started over effectively and ended up going through med school at Howard University. So they set the tone. And my mother is an educator. She 83 years young this month, and she really embodied activism at the grassroots level. In my hometown, Teaneck, New Jersey, was considered one of the first to voluntarily desegregate in the country. And so you have a school system that chose to integrate. And I came along in 1970 and was just around this environment where we tried to bridge differences. We tried to understand each other, different walks of life. And so I came from this setting where I saw solutions. So whenever I've had experiences along race, racially charged, I always saw the possibilities of what could be a positive outcome because I've lived it through my childhood. So that's where my optimism comes from. And my parents set that tone. But, you know, certainly, you know, from there was always players that, you know, came up and mentors. You know, I always loved Gary Maddux, for example, as a Phillies fan. And he became someone that I looked to a lot as a player. But baseball is great about mentorship, passing it down. So there's quite a few examples of people that gave sage advice at the right time that helped my career and my future.
The Caribbean culture and that intersection with Black American culture, what was that like for your dad? Because that can sometimes lead to conflict too.
No, it's a great question. In my household, it was a tremendous asset to have my father's perspective on being from a completely different country. The one thing that my mom would always underscore is she grew up in the South. So she understood, you know, Jim Crow and all the things that came with the South. And the interesting thing that she gleaned from my father was that he wasn't burdened in a certain degree about race as we feel it in America. He was kind of like, well, I don't really get it. Like, you know, the prime minister, the president, you know, in my country, you know, the chief of police, everybody's Black. Like, I don't like there was no barriers to like, oh, you can't go but so far and this person's going to keep you down. And there was always this sort of openness that he just saw, had a certain self-confidence about it. And that was very, it was something that was contagious. And my mom gained a lot of strength from seeing his feeling of freeness in that regard, even though, yes, he was still in America and he was still, he had a job where he was an elevator operator in between med school semesters, because that was the only job he could get as a Black man in the area. So he understood it, he experienced it, but he still always saw this vision for a place that would be different. So in that regard, it was actually a very positive dynamic between my parents that I absolutely springboarded off of.
That blending of culture, how do you think it shaped you, where you have the what your mom experienced in the South growing up at the time that she did? You also have baseball and the weight of that history, and then your dad's experience. How do you think it shaped you?
Oh, it was hugely significant. I mean, you think of it. Well, when I got drafted by the Cubs, and even up until then, my parents weren't very comfortable with the whole thing because, first of all, they were both first-generation college, Hampton and Howard. They saw me, you know, going to this Ivy League school, and they were just concerned about some of the racial history in baseball. They just didn't feel comfortable sending their son into this, and that was just their first feeling about it. For example, when I got traded to the Phillies in 1998, my grandfather passed away literally the night before, and you know, from the South. And when I was traded over there in Northern Philadelphia was my mom's great aunts and uncles that where she spent a lot of her summers working and saving money. They had boycotted effectively going to any Phillies games since like 1958. They were so upset about how they treated Jackie Robinson that they were not even dealing with the Phillies. And it took me getting traded over there literally 40 years later for them to reconsider that. That's how deep that history ran. So when you think about the influence of your family and the, you know, the connection, as you said, the intersection between culture and sports, they were the historians that I learned from. And I understood the responsibility. I understood the legacy and the history, and that there was going to be pitfalls, and some of which were simply because of the color of my skin. Some of which were, you know, other reasons are just the challenges of trying to be at the top of your profession. And to distinguish those two wasn't always easy. So I had great guiding lights through my parents. And then my brother, who loved baseball and taught me about the passion of the game, fighting for the game and not letting anybody take away from my passion. Like, yes, there's people trying to stop you, but still, you love the game. Don't let them steal it from you. My brother was sort of that cherry on top with that perspective.
You seem like you're very warmed by the idea of the link of baseball history that you are a part of. When you think about all the players that came before you, going all the way back to the beginnings of the game, what stands out in your mind as being most important and most relevant to you?
I'd have to say the mentorship, the exposure to different kinds of people passing down, you know, generations of not only just the game and the lore, but the real priorities of trying to keep something intact that has a strong history. Yes, there was many times where people look like me were completely excluded from that history, but there's a storyline that tells America's story in baseball. And I think like no other sport, whether it's the fact that you play every day, whether it's the timelessness or the lack of time, there's so many elements that make it unique. When you play something every single day, you automatically relate to America in a certain kind of way. There's a game every day. You're going to work. You got to get after it. You go up levels. You get demoted. You go down levels. You get traded in the middle of the night. There's all these elements that make it very tangible. And I always felt as baseball was that first sport. I loved baseball and I still love baseball. So I do engage it with warmth, with optimism, with hope, recognizing that there's plenty of flaws. And when you overlay race to it, there's no question that I've spoken quite a bit about the lack of black managers and discussing about coaches and the importance of mentorship, all these things. But, you know, you feel like you're part of something that kind of goes in all directions of time. That's what's so amazing about baseball. You feel that. And when you get the torch, whether it's through the Players Association as a union rep or whether it's talking to other black players about your experience, that connects you in like no other way. So, I love the diversity in baseball, really on the field, being able to be exposed to people of so many different walks of life from all over the world, learning languages and cultures and doing it for one common goal. That to me is also really powerful.
I've been trying to circle the square on this when it comes to Jackie Robinson Day. Inevitably, what ends up happening is there's going to be, when April 15th comes around, there's going to be a ton of stories about the lack of representation of specifically, and I wish that people would actually differentiate, of black Americans who play the game of baseball. This happens every year like clockwork. And I kind of feel like the fact that there are choices, that my nephews and nieces have choices on what they can play. And if they choose to not play baseball, it doesn't offend me, even as someone who grew up as a black baseball fan. I'm not sure what to take of the statistics of only 8% of black American players play baseball. What do you take from it?
Yeah, and it's been a very complicated discussion to unearth. Is there something to it? When you go back to the 70s, you have such huge percentages of African-American ball players, you know, the Pirates, you think of We Are Family and so on. And the shift is pretty notable that there's this fairly single-digit percentage of black players involved in the game as players, the coaching staff. I mean, Dusty Baker was recently hired and that, you know, it took someone to go through a sign-stealing scandal for him to get a job, you know, in this case. So, those are huge questions. And you just think about Jackie Robinson, and as you mentioned, his final speech, which was in Cincinnati, was about wanting to see basically black faces and black managers, or particularly coaches, as he mentioned, on the field. That was the next frontier for him. And not a whole lot had changed, you know, over the times since that time in terms of the numbers and to talk about black managers. And, you know, it's something that goes back to Al Campanis, 1987, the Dodgers front office. The thing that he gets, you know, completely eviscerated for was talking about blacks not having capabilities or capacity to be in leadership position. And he made the analogy to swimming. That's one thing. And that was offensive. But the other thing he said was this sort of staircase to get to be a major league manager. You go up, you pay your dues, and he's kind of implied like, well, black folks don't really want to do that. They don't want to pay their dues. It's a long road. They don't, you know, he was talking about sacrifice and going through the minor leagues. And the irony is, as soon as the sort of pipeline of minor league, okay, we're going to, you know, black managers, Latino, they're going to go into the minor leagues and pay their dues and work their way up. it's interesting how analytics then came on the scene, and no longer was it this staircase to opportunity. Now it's a lateral move where people are special assistants and groomed to be moved over, and you don't, all of a sudden now you don't need experience. So when the goalposts keep moving about what are the standards, and when the sort of the pathway is now filled with diversity, and then the rules change, yes, you're going to have a lot of difficulty when those rules change and are much more shifted and slanted to benefiting people who are already on the inside. So that to me also hurts diversity on a certain level. We're seeing some, you know, Latino managers are certainly starting to get some representation. It's been a tragic year in that regard with Alex Cora and Carlos Beltran. So those are bigger issues, but there's no doubt that that's a fair question to ask, because when it comes to leadership and ownership and decision-making, diversity is important to be able to hear from all voices. And if you don't, you tend to get single-minded, and that tends to exclude people.
Yeah, it does seem like we're at a point now where only one type of person gets to be an executive in baseball. Strangely enough, you're kind of the outlier, because you fit into the box of Ivy League educated, plus you actually have the on-the-field aspect of it down too. But it seems as if every time I look up, there's like, oh, well, this person graduated from Yale. This person graduated from Harvard. This person ran a hedge fund, or whatever it is that they did. And it seems to be a tad bit exclusive to the keys to the kingdom.
Well, and who controls who has those keys, right? Who shares those keys will also dictate who gets in the kingdom, right? Or who stays and what role they play. So, but there's no question about it. I mean, the analytics world is a significant milestone, and it's shifted a lot of things as the profile, quote unquote, of the manager. You see a lot of young managers who kind of my age or younger, who are former players who pretty much just retired. They get groomed as a special assistant, and boom, they're major league managers. What's the difference? Well, you don't see as much of that institutional knowledge. You see more player knowledge that's translated into a manager that can flow well with the front office and distill a lot of the analytics, and quite frankly, just do the biddings of the analytics decision-making tree, the algorithms. There's a lot of that happening. The danger is you may lose some of that institutional respect of, you know, the value of having Bruce Bochy or Dusty Baker, someone who's kind of been around the block and has a certain instinct for it. Those instincts are getting quantified now. They're getting measurable, and it makes managers fungible and interchangeable. And my argument is, well, if that's the case, then anybody could be a candidate to manage once they hit certain thresholds. And therefore, it seems like a very good opportunity to have a strong level of diversity at the ranks, because you've stripped away the legacy of, oh, you have to pay your dues. Now it's just there's an equation to it, and that should know no color.
What's your advice for players that, whether they be players of color, that are dealing with some of the bigotry that we saw in the 40s and 50s, and they're not necessarily dealing with it from their own teammates or the opponents, like some of the early players in Major League history once integration happened have, but they're dealing with it on social media. They're dealing with it with fans in the stands. What's your approach to dealing with some of these things, and what will your advice be?
Yeah, it's difficult. I mean, I certainly have had my share, and I'm in the media, and I've also commented on, you know, three pretty major incidents that's happened to me in the last 5 years or so. And I've written about it, and I've called some stuff out, and I've, you know, earned my troll nation that I've had to block people and so on. So there's no question that it's out there. It's toxic. And there's a lot of cowardice, because people can just hide behind avatars and Twitter handles and whatever. They don't face people anymore. There's a lot of cowardice. And so that makes people emboldened. We also have a lot of our political landscape is very fraught with tension. There's always this flirtation with some of the old school playbooks of divide and conquer and bigotry and the other and the check the box and things like that. So, we have certainly a lot of things that are colliding that are making it easier for people or more comfortable to just come out and say whatever they need to say and do it in an anonymous way. So the difficulty for me, social media, managing that matters. I think that getting caught up in your mentions and all that is probably not a great way to go. You have to be mindful of that. Still, people do better if they can engage and have actual real conversations. And you don't want to lose sight of just engaging your teammates, engaging people, being able to talk about it. There are a lot of people that you can, work with that can relate to those experiences. Seek them out, try to make change, bring it to people's attention. That is some advantage of today, where people will go out and speak on issues and will call it out and will go up the chain and it will get addressed in some form or fashion. But there's a lot of toxicity out there, and it's been ratcheted up certainly in recent times. So it's something that, in some degree, as a player, even I almost can't relate to as vehement and as daily as it can be.
What's the pride you feel being part of this fraternity of Black baseball players?
What's the best part of it?
Yeah, what's the pride in it for you?
Well. I always go back to legacy. You know, I step back and mention Jackie Robinson, but so many other examples, Dick Allen and so on. And I know Billy Williams, Fergie Jenkins. I think of, what shoulders I'm standing on. And I think, it's funny. I love Jurassic Park. And there's a line in there by the guy, Jeff Goldblum, who plays Ian Malcolm, about I'm paraphrasing, but he says, you have to be careful when you don't have the humility of knowing what people went through, and then you're just standing on the shoulders of what they did and taking all the benefits, but not taking the responsibility. I feel a great responsibility, but I don't see it as something negative. I know and I understand, and I spend a lot of time paying attention to history, and baseball engages that as well as any sport, to know the players that came before you. And I pay attention to that, and it means a lot that people had it very difficult. I'm very fortunate to be able to have had the career that I've had and be able to be in media now because of so many doors that were open before me. So that humility of knowing that, I take a lot of pride in that. I take a lot of pride. It's an interesting sometimes juxtaposition or oxymoron of being humbled by it, but also being proud to recognize that I've come from the improbable in certain cases. My dad's story, Trinidad and Tobago. He goes to teacher's college. He's a renowned professor. He goes on and gets to be at Queen's College. He's learning. And all of a sudden, he gets transferred after he's an assistant headmaster at 31 years old and decides, you know what? I'm going to get a better life. I'm going to go for something different because I'll never be transferred again. And it was a political shakeup there in Trinidad. And he went on to come to the United States. My mom coming from Rocky Mount, North Carolina, just an amazing story, sharecropping and all the stories. So, you're here because you had survivors. I mean, so just waking up every day is pretty much miraculous. So that in of itself is enough, let alone like baseball and playing and whatever. I just think of where I come from every single day. And I try to think of where I'm hoping to go. And I don't want to do it alone. I want to carry people with me in honoring people that came before.
I'm with you on that. The lift as you climb thing is a big deal to me. Doug, thanks for this. I appreciate you being as thoughtful as usual as you are. And I appreciate your view on things. I think it's an important one, and I'm glad that you were able to share it with me.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
That was awesome, man. Thank you so much for this.
Yeah, anytime, man. Great stuff, and got to keep talking about it.